Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Tuesday with all sorts of news. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're right here on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. 1 hour from now, a very, very interesting Herd hierarchy. Week 3 in the NFL. Some musical chairs going on after last night. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. What a game, huh?
Wow. It was kind of one of those jarring, like, okay, what do I make of that moment, right? We get those in sports. It's a million games. A lot don't mean anything.
It spiraled pretty quickly.
Yeah, so let's start with that. Last year. I want to go back to last year. Green Bay had been pushed around a little bit by Philadelphia and the Chargers. And then in week 12, they faced San Francisco. And Green Bay got punched right in the neck. 37-8. Over at halftime, hell, over in the second quarter. Green Bay won the rest of its games and went to the NFC Championship. I could never unsee that. I never took Green Bay seriously. Between getting pushed around by Philadelphia, get pushed around by the Chargers, but San Francisco wasn't even a fair fight. It looked like a boxing match with a heavyweight and a lightweight. I couldn't unsee it. I never took Green Bay seriously. By the way, either did Green Bay because they went and drafted three interior linemen, a blocking tight end, and a power running back. Green Bay knew they had an issue. I'm watching Lamar Jackson take on Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City, and Baltimore. I can't unsee that. It changes things. The gap between Mahomes and Lamar is growing. The gap between the Chiefs' confidence and the Ravens' confidence when they play the Chiefs is widening. It's getting worse, not better. Lamar's now 0-5 against the Chiefs in playoff teams, and he doesn't look the same on third down trailing. I feel like Patrick Mahomes is on an escalator. You've seen those in the mall? He's just slowly ascending. Every time I see him, he's just a little better reaching the top floor. The question is, with Lamar Jackson, is he on one of those people movers at the airport? It gets you there faster. It's really efficient. I love getting on him. But it's useless if you're trying to go to the very top floor. And the very top floor in the NFL is, of course, the Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson trailing. Lamar Jackson has to pass third and long. It's widening. He's not the same. Third and 14 for Mahomes. They just drop touchdown plays. I mean, score doesn't matter. Like, on the field, where your field position doesn't matter. Time doesn't really matter on third and 14. Russell Wilson's got a little bit of that, a lot of that. With Patrick Mahomes, it doesn't feel like that. Score, trailing, down in distance, feels like it matters. It impacts him. Now, Patrick Mahomes admitted last year, he admitted this, his words. He goes, I couldn't really read a defense until just a little bit past halfway on the season. All right, so I went and looked a little past halfway in the season. That's week 11. He's 12-0. He's lost three games, by the way, last year. Two in a bad ankle and one. Remember, he had the dislocated knee. It was the first game back, and you could tell he didn't want to run. He had dislocated knee. I mean, Tom Brady, after he had a knee issue, didn't want to get hit for a year. For about a game, Mahomes is like, I'm not running. That's it. Since then, week 11, 12-0, and it's getting worse. Now, let's add perspective. Let's not go crazy here. It's Monday Night Football. The only game being played. You know, a week ago, we thought the Raiders were great. Let's slow down. Let's add perspective. Let's put those numbers up. Yes, Lamar Jackson is still great. Baltimore's going to win their division. They're going to reel off a bunch of wins. And Lamar Jackson is 21-1 against the rest of the NFL. He's just not good against Kansas City. But part of why he's not is he gets into a gunfight and he falls behind and he doesn't quite feel the same. Now, Baltimore's not going to be behind in most of the games. I think they're going to win their division. He's going to have a great year. He's an incredible young talent. But when I saw the Packers last year just get pushed all over the field, it was like a mismatch in an octagon. I couldn't take them seriously. I knew they were good. I knew they could get to the NFC Championship, but against San Francisco, they played in the second time. I'm like, this is not competitive. This is not, and it wasn't. And if these two teams play again, and I think Baltimore could end up in the AFC Championship, but if across the field's Patrick Mahomes, I can't unsee what I saw last night. I can't. Either can John Harbaugh. He talked after.
Well, obviously, we haven't beaten them. So, you know, they've outplayed us in all three games, if you want to go back for 3 years. So, but we didn't play well today. They beat us. They out-executed us. They out-game-planned us. They just beat us. So that's the story tonight. Big picture stuff, all that, I don't know. They're better, obviously. They're a better football team at this point in time. So you win or you learn, and we have a lot to learn from this game right here.
May still be the two best teams in the AFC. I still think Baltimore is a top four or five team in the NFL. Absolutely. I still think they're going to win the next most of the games they play. And they're going to win a playoff game, maybe two. But that leaves a mark. All right, Doc Rivers, let's shift to the NBA for a few minutes, was fired yesterday, dismissed by Steve Ballmer, the owner. I listened to every radio and TV commentator, and they all had the same opinion. It was time for Doc to go. I mean, he's a good guy, but, you know, as a coach, I don't think this is a right fit. There's a couple of haves in sports. I'm going to defend Doc Rivers here. In the NFL, Andy Reid got fired. So did Pete Carroll twice and Bill Belichick, because they didn't have what you need in the NFL. A top quarterback to win rings. Pete, Andy, and Bill got them, and they all got hardware. In the NBA, the have, everybody thinks it's a star. No, it's not. There's a lot of stars. Who's your number two? If you do not have a dependable clutch number two star, you will not win titles. Doc did in Boston, Paul Pierce's clutch. He won a title. But in L.A., the Clippers, he had Blake Griffin next to Carmelo, the most overrated player in the league for 15 years. And then this team has Paul George. I've seen Paul George in Indy, OKC, and L.A. He's good. He ain't clutch, bruh. How do I know this is true? Because Michael Jordan, the best player ever, couldn't win without Pippen. Kevin Durant couldn't win titles without Steph. And LeBron's got titles with D-Wade, always clutch. And Kyrie Irving, a little bit of a head case, but he's a closer in clutch. By the way, the best basketball coach I've ever seen is Phil Jackson. When Pippen was his two, he won titles. When Kobe was a two to Shaq, he won titles. When Pau Gasol was a two to Kobe, he won titles. You know what he won when he didn't have a dependable clutch two in the playoffs? Nothing. Go ahead, but Doc Rivers didn't miss open jumpers. Doc Rivers didn't melt down. Look at the resumes of the other coaches you want to bring in. It's not as good as Doc Rivers. Belichick's record in the NFL pre-Brady, 41 wins and 57 losses. Pete Carroll, fired twice, was a slightly sub-500 coach pre-Russell Wilson. Rings when they got the guy. Paul George's history is clear. He is a very good player, but the reason he's more B-plus than A-plus, he melts when it matters. By the way, Frank Vogel got fired too when he had Paul George. Now he's got LeBron. And Anthony Davis is a two. Now Frank Vogel's the talk of the town. Is Ty Lue going to make Paul George clutch? Sort of like Mike D'Antoni's going to make Russell Westbrook clutch? In the NFL, you got to have a quarterback or you end up being a TV broadcaster. You end up being Herm Edwards. You go to television, you're great. You go to college, you do a great job. But you're not coaching in the NFL very long if you don't have a quarterback. Especially in the last 7 to 10 years. The game has changed, man. Used to be able to win with defense. They changed all the rules now. It's pinball out there. Everybody bouncing around, can't hit anybody. The rules have all changed. Maybe you could do it 20 years ago. You can't now. And in the NBA, it's not just about the star. Michael was a star and didn't win anything. He didn't win anything until he had Pippen. You got to have a two. Doc had it in Boston and won. Should have won a second championship. Got to a game seven. And, you know, met a world, talked to a psychologist, he told us, hit a jumper, and it's all history. But go ahead, bang on Doc. But when he had a two, he won. And when Pete didn't have a quarterback, he was fired Pete Carroll in New England and fired Pete Carroll in New York, and Pete Carroll was 14-18 in Seattle, and they were ready to run him out of town as he had Matt Flynn in the locker room ready to take the Seahawks out. Then something called Russell Wilson happened, just like something called Paul George happened in L.A., I like Paul. I've met Paul. He's a good player. He's a really good player. But we got a history here, and the history is Doc wins with a good two, and Paul shrinks when he's asked to be the one of the two in the playoffs. All right, coming up, We got Jerry Jones talking and squawking, and he may have just insulted Dak Prescott. We have top of next hour, the herd hierarchy. And one more thing about Patrick Mahomes. I know what you're thinking. Kansas City's unbeatable. But not according to Fox Bet in Vegas, they're not. I'll explain that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
RecTech Grills, built by grillers for grillers. RecTech with a Q.com, RecTech.com. Smart grill technology allows for perfectly even heat. Doug Gottlieb this hour, top of next hour, The Herd Hierarchy plus Peter King. So beyond the obvious butt kicking last night, the first thing I'm thinking of, because the game felt like it was over, like midway through the second, you're like, this thing's getting out of hand. It was the closest blowout I'd ever seen, right? It was like 20-10, and it felt like a lopsided blowout. And my first takeaway is, well, how do you beat Kansas City? And I think there's two teams in the league that can do something. First of all, it's nice to have a little bit of a running game so you could take the ball out of Kansas City's hands, eat the clock. That's important. That's usually a way to beat great quarterbacks is keep them on the bench. But what's more important is getting to Mahomes without blitzing. The two teams I've seen in the league that can get pressure without blitzing and have a quarterback good enough to be a headache, New England with Cam and Tampa with Brady. They both can eat some clock running. That's the second thing. But the first thing is they'll get pressure without bringing heat because, as Patrick Mahomes said, once he figured out how to read a defense, blitzes no longer work. They didn't work against Peyton Manning. They didn't work against Tom Brady in his prime. And they're now not working against Mahomes. Against the blitz last night, he was 17 of 23 touchdowns and 156 quarterback rating. Blitzing's out. Unless it comes from the weak side and he can't see it. Remember, Monday Night Football, we over hyperventilate. The Raiders are amazing. No, they're not. Week one, Steven Goskowski is the worst kicker in the league. He was 6-for-6 last week. He's won three games with game-winning kicks. He's not the worst kicker in the league. So let's not go crazy. But if you go to the Super Bowl, what did San Francisco do against Patrick Mahomes? And this is the Patrick that admitted he'd learned how to read a defense. They got pressure with four. And for three quarters, it worked. And probably would have worked if Jimmy Garoppolo hits one deep ball to Emmanuel Sanders. By the way, this is what the New York Giants did to beat the undefeated New England Patriots with Tom Brady. That wasn't about Eli Manning. Eli had one great throw. That was about getting massive pressure with four and then dropping seven into coverage. So Tom was hurried and throwing in to seven defenders. And so if you look at what Tampa can do right now with Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh, Shaq Barrett, JPP, they'll get heat and they have an amazing linebacking core. So Tampa doesn't have to blitz. They'll get heat. New England now doesn't need to blitz and they can get heat. Then augment that with a nice little running game with Cam, Sony Michel, Rex Burkhead, or you go with Tampa and Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones. So it's nice to have occasionally once or twice a game have Mahomes sitting on the sidelines for 8 minutes, 20 minutes of real time, 8 minutes of game time and watching, get him a little, potentially a little out of sync. But I'm watching last night, and I see Tampa's defense and Tom Brady, New England's defense and Cam in that running game, and I think that's the way to beat him. And by the way, Vegas sees that. What do you think the line is for New England at Kansas City? It's 7. That's all it is. It's 7. Because they know Patrick Mahomes is going to be under duress, and Belichick's going to drop that amazing secondary back into coverage, and they're going to pound and pound and pound the ball and keep Patrick, at least for a little while, off the field. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line
that,
News.
That pass rush without blitzing, no quarterback ever has liked it. Nobody's ever said, I love the fact they drop seven into coverage and I have to throw a second sooner than I want. It's like it works against everybody.
Well, speaking of the Patriots, Cam Newton has spoken about how important this year is with the Patriots. And he was feeling a little disrespected following his release from the Panthers. Yeah. He's taking the season so seriously, in fact, that he hasn't brought his family up to Boston yet.
This is a business trip for me. The fact that I don't have none of my children here in Boston with me and the fact that I haven't been able to see them on a regularity, that's angry in itself for me. And that's as serious as I'm making it, and that's as serious as it is.
Wow, that's a Boston bubble. So he doesn't have his family up there?
Well, I mean, it's think about it. That's a lot, especially in a year like this, to move five kids up to Boston.
I would think at Thanksgiving, though. Like, I think it's great now.
Well, I will say this. This is not that uncommon. Like, guys do this when they're on a one-year deal. You know, it's a big undertaking to move kids. You've got school. Right. We're in COVID. You got to find a house. Right. You got to make sure they're okay.
Boy,
you
Cam
likely
is...
don't have any family there. I mean, he's in Carolina. Like, you, I don't know his family situation, but you have people around that can help your partner with the kids. Like, they have their friends. Like, it's not as simple as, like, oh, let's all pick up and move to Boston for a year. Or really not even for a year, like, for a season. So it's really not that surprising to me that he doesn't have them there. But I can understand why that would add to the stress of the situation and you know, make it even more
it's interesting.
This hyper-focused thing.
It's almost like Cam heard everybody calling him distracted. You know, it's like Jimmy Butler heard everybody say, you know, he's not a great team player. He goes to Miami, is like, oh, I'm going to change that narrative. Like, my knock on Cam was always, I always use the word, he's distracted.
Yep.
It's almost like he's heard it from everybody saying, you know, not really. And now he can still wear beautiful outfits. Nothing wrong with that. You can still do Superman. But this is like a new, I mean, this Cam is like hyper-focused.
This is the perfect, you could not pick a more perfect scenario to dispel any kind of critique or suggestion about his personality than being in New England with Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And this is just another layer to it. Like you said, he's distracted. Well, his family's not there with him. He's completely focused on football right now. He's coming back from obviously an injury and being let go from the Panthers.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this, the pressures of these guys being in the bubble, being away from their families. That's for a few months. I mean, he's talking about an entire season. Now, obviously, he's saying he's, you know, seeing them sporadically, but it's definitely adding to everything that's been said about Cam Newton this year. If he continues trending the way it is, that's going to be very tough to continue saying. So like the rest of the Jets team, Sam Darnold has gone off to a bad start this season.
Yeah.
And Adam Gase said he is not planning on giving up on his young quarterback.
Oh, that's nice.
That's always a tough decision because he's 23 years old and he's in his third year. And I think every snap that he takes in a real game is so valuable. They're learning experiences. You have to go through tough situations sometimes. You need to keep playing. He keeps fixing the mistakes that are made and then really emphasizing the things that he's doing really well and just keep building on those.
We're going to talk a lot about this today, but I mean, calm down.
I know people are nuts.
Are you insane?
I know.
We're three games into the season.
And by the way, you think San Francisco's got injury issues? The Jets don't have any healthy...
He's without Jamison Crowder, Denzel Mims, Rashad Perryman, Le'Veon Bell.
Those were his four best offensive players, all out. By the way, the right tackle was hurt last week. I don't know if the left tackle's playing this week. Their center, Connor McGovern, was out last week. C.J. Mosley opted out. Jamal Adams got traded. They don't have any players. I mean, they got like three defensive guys I like and a left tackle if he's healthy and Darnold. That's it.
I mean, this is not the excuse machine for Sam Darnold, right? He wasn't great. He threw two pick sixes.
Yeah.
First time since 2013 with the Jets that's happened since Geno Smith. But let's say you're ready to bail on Sam Darnold, which is egregious, 3 weeks into the season. For who?
I know.
Joe Flacco's not available. He's still inactive. So you want Mike White. He was drafted in the fifth round by Dallas in 2018.
Yeah, we just need everybody's hyperventilating.
No regular season experience in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah. They did that last year with a couple guys. It didn't work well.
They used to do this all the time in Miami with Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
The backup quarterback is the best job in America.
It's always the easiest solution.
It doesn't work. He's going to go in there. You've seen him just enough to say, I like that. Like, he, the starting quarterback was out for two games. He came in and won one of them. I mean, people in Miami used to talk about Matt Moore like he was John Elway. And that's no disrespect to Matt
Moore. Backup quarterbacks.
He's a great backup quarterback.
Backup quarterbacks are like most in-laws. A little goes a long way. And if they're there for like a night, you're like, you know, I miss Bob. We should do more with Bob. If he's there two nights, you're like, if Bob never shows up to the house again, I'm good. Backup quarterbacks should just, you get them like every other year for a game.
Yeah.
Really? That guy needs a lot more respect.
Feel good about it. It's great, you know, quarterback room guy. Calm down.
Yes.
If you're done with Sam Darnold, be done with him at the end of this year. Because, yes, we are aware that the season is pretty much lost for the Jets. But what is the value of not seeing what else you have from Sam Darnold? At best, he's in a struggling situation. This is the perfect scenario to see if he can carry a team.
Yeah.
Calm down. Earl Thomas may have found a new team in the NFL.
Heard that.
He's reportedly visiting the Texans for a workout. He will likely sign a deal with the team this week.
It's a good fit.
Seven-time Pro Bowler. Was cut by the Ravens last month after an altercation with a teammate.
Former Texas Longhorn.
So the Texans really need this badly. They rank 29th in opponent QBR. They've allowed at least 28 points in all three games this season. Now, they've held opposing quarterbacks to less than 220 net passing yards in every game this season, but that's just because everyone's running the ball on them.
That's right. So, games are over at half. You don't have to throw much.
Yeah, and A.J. Moore is on the IR after suffering a hamstring injury.
This fits. This is a good fit.
This is a good fit, yes.
Baltimore structure, not a good fit. Houston, this is a good fit for the former Longhorn.
It does.
Yeah, enjoy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Top of next hour, the Herd Hierarchy. Jerry Jones doing some talking in Dallas. Did he offend Dak Prescott? Dak won't be offended. Dak's not offended by anything. If he's not offended by the criticism already, he's not. But Jerry was a little loose-lipped this morning. We'll get to that in a second. Let's bring in Doug Gottlieb, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So I said, like, there's some things, Doug, you can't unsee. And when the Packers got crushed by the Niners last year, look, he's wearing his hat backwards. It just blows everything. When the Packers got dominated by San Francisco, I just couldn't unsee it. It was like, okay, I can't take them seriously to a Super Bowl. Part of me with Baltimore is they may win 12 straight games, Doug, but that Mahomes, Lamar, Kansas City, Baltimore thing, like, it's getting worse, right? The gap's getting wider, right?
It was honestly almost the exact same game as last year, where what happened last year was there's a couple of late plays where Lamar literally just threw it up and prayed, and that prayer was answered. The score last night was not indicative of just how big a blowout it was. I mean, keep in mind that the Chiefs didn't kick a field goal at the end of the game. Missed an extra point. They also fumbled the ball driving down the field in the second half. There's something else. Bud Kirk kicked off. He didn't have to kick off. You can always just kick it out of bounds, and they gave up a kick return touchdown. Otherwise, it's a 30-point game. This is a complete mismatch, and it exposes one that Lamar still struggles to throw outside the numbers, but it also exposes Baltimore's defense, which looked bad as can be, tough as can be, against the Browns early in the season, the first game of the season. But the speed of Tyreek Hill really exposed Marcus Peters as a guy who likes to spy in the backfield but can't cover real speed. So I don't think it was just the ceiling of Lamar. I also think it exposed a little bit of the lack of the speed on that defense as the Chiefs did anything they wanted to the Baltimore Ravens. I don't care if there's fans there or not fans there. The Chiefs, and frankly the Chargers, they have the blueprint, and if you have the personnel, you can beat and slow down the Ravens, which very few teams have been able to do.
I want to do some NBA stuff because we're going to get an incredible finals. But I did say, listen, we just cast aside. The NBA treats coaches terribly. It's always the coach's fault. It doesn't mean coach of the year means you're going to get fired in a year. They just do a terrible job with coaches. And I understand that. It's a players' league. I totally get it. But in the NFL, Pete Carroll, Belichick, Andy Reid get fired. They get the quarterback. They win rings. In the NBA, you know, there's a reason why Michael, LeBron with Wade, KD with Steph, you don't win championships no matter how good you are. You need a number two that's clutch. Paul George wasn't clutch. Paul Pierce was. Doc won with a guy that was clutch. Blake Griffin, to me, was a great athlete. Was he clutch? Not really. Some of this, we can blame Doc. I get it. Maybe it's time for a new coach. I'm not saying that's wrong. There's a lot of good young coaches out there. But this morning I'm driving to work and it's just Doc's the wrong fit. He's bad. Isn't it more of a Paul George issue?
Well, I think it's both. I think you obviously have to be concerned that Paul George doesn't have it. But I think clearly Doc lost the locker room. And whether he lost the locker room because of treating Paul George as if he's Kawhi Leonard or because of his substitution pattern. Look, I think the front office, which did a very smart thing in terms of building the team. I think adding Reggie Jackson late was a mistake. I think they went after, you know, Markieff Morris because they had to have, you know, another stretch big. Look, it wasn't the perfectly constructed team because your leader is kind of mute, right? Like Kawhi Leonard's never been a verbal leader. Paul George, who wants to be a verbal leader, isn't viewed as a leader in the locker room. They didn't have a point guard. That's why they wanted Darren Collison in the offseason, and they never really solved that. I don't think they handled quarantine well in that once they got down to Orlando, everyone wasn't there. They had the Lou Williams situation, which was frankly an embarrassment to the league, but especially to the Clippers, right? If you're here to win a championship, you don't stop at a strip club on the way back to the airport. Pretty simple. So they have a bunch of issues, but Doc Rivers was supposed to be the guy that controlled it all, had complete control and respect within the locker room, and obviously that wasn't the feelings on the exit interviews, and that's why a change has to be made. The problem becomes, to win in the NBA, you have to have the respect of the locker room. To have the respect of the locker room, you have to have one in the NBA. So that really limits their pool to Ty Lue and, I guess, Jeff Van Gundy. Other than that, there's really no one else they can reach out to.
So LeBron makes his 10th final with his 5th head coach. Unlike Michael Jordan, every team he leaves, even the well-run ones like Miami, disintegrate for at least a while. Michael left the Bulls. They were still excellent. I remember watching those teams, and they're a call away from the NBA Finals. I said yesterday, I looked at this Laker roster, and I said, it reminds me of the Pelicans. If you take LeBron out of it, except they had Drew Holiday, who's an all-star, and AD. I look at this roster. If you took LeBron out of the Lakers,
you're gonna do this thing that Jordan couldn't.
Well, no.
Take this
I don't. No, 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 no.
They didn't play the Clippers.
No, I know, but I just ask this.
The Warriors took the season off.
You have your head on backwards. I can't take it totally seriously. Okay. If you take...
I posted like 10 different quarterbacks, including Russell Wilson.
I didn't see
wearing
them.
His hat backwards at the podium, and yeah. You still won't get off of this hat backwards.
By the way, if Aaron
You're
wore
just
it,
old.
If Aaron
it.
Wore it forward, he'd have more Super Bowls. Back to LeBron. If LeBron is off this roster, let's take this roster. Rondo.
That's not how it works. That's not how it works.
Yeah, but how good would they be?
Listen, if you want to really break down the if you want to do the anti-Nick Wright thing, here's the truth. When he went to Miami, it wasn't just that they built a superpower Miami. It's that you took two other playoff teams, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Toronto Raptors, and you took their best players off of them and put them onto the Miami Heat. So of course you not only created a super team, but you created no competition in the East outside of Boston, who was over the hill. Right. Okay. So then you go to the Lakers and the Warriors took the season off. There's no other real legit competition outside of the Clippers who we didn't play. And you took the best player off the Pelicans. Look, I think LeBron is the MVP of the entire league in the regular season. He was spectacular, not because he was their best talented player, but because he led. They were a great defensive team. I think the job that Frank Vogel and his staff have done. Magnificent. They use zone. They've got them to play defensively. They got LeBron, who wants to play slow, to play faster at the point guard position. Like, all of these things are important. And I think, you know, dealing with quarantine and being in the bubble, it hasn't been easy for any of these players. The Clippers disintegrated because of it. The Lakers got emboldened because of it, because they got on this quest to have a title for LeBron. So I'm not in any way going to take away from LeBron. And in game five, against the Denver Nuggets, he was spectacular. But dude, he's going against Michael Porter Jr., who could not guard the couch that I'm sitting in or the chair you're sitting in. They're going against the Nuggets, who no one thought should actually be there. It was a miracle for them to be in that position. And in no way it should take away from what Michael Jordan did. Go back and watch The Last Dance. I'm watching it with my son. He's super into it. We're watching a second time, and you start to realize Rodman was over the hill. Scottie Pippen was not healthy that entire season and didn't play most of the year. And they went through a much more talented Indiana Pacers team and found a way to survive and get to the finals, where he had the last 6 points and the big steal. He was the best player in the league, led the league in scoring, first team all NBA, first team all defense. He's the exact same age as LeBron James right now. And yes, he would have done quite fine with the Lakers. It shouldn't take away from LeBron, but we can't take away from LeBron to build up Jordan. We shouldn't take away from Jordan to build up LeBron.
All I know is when you get to the finals with five different coaches, that's unbelievable to me.
No, but he's spectacular. Okay, he's spectacular. Let's be honest. He did it in the East, which was weak. And I know Nick Wright's coming at me with he did it in the West. Like, yeah, but they didn't play the Clippers. And the Warriors didn't play this year. So I'm not trying to take away from what they've done. I think it is magnificent considering where they were last year. Complete dysfunction. We should also point out he was part of that dysfunction. Showing up at the game with a glass of wine, buzzing. Trying to trade away his teammates, not sitting with them. Right? Like, he was part of the problem. And he's become the biggest part of the solution heading forward. It's a great story, but it has to be told in the proper context.
By the way, turn your hat around and see what it looks like. Now, Joey, you be the judge. Now, it's Oklahoma State, great program. Now, look at that. Now, that looks like a starting third baseman, an all-star third baseman. That looks like a guy that plays third base for Oklahoma State Cowboys and is actually very, very good. Now, turn it the other way one more time. That's a middle reliever who can't get in. Tell me I'm wrong on that. Did you see how handsome he looked when he turned it?
Did you wear it on backwards on purpose, Doug?
Of course he did.
Of course. Well, first, I actually wear my hat backwards, like most human beings that are under the age of 60. That's calling out. And, you know, like there's a reason they put the NFL and Major League Baseball and this is Pistol Pete logo on the back of hats because dudes wear their hats backwards.
You know what? Yeah. Colin doesn't wear hats.
I don't wear hats.
So maybe this is playing a role in the situation.
I don't wear.
He doesn't wear hats.
He does when he plays tennis. He does when he plays tennis.
Oh. Well, because the sun, it's so hot.
I could see you as a visor guy.
I am a visor guy.
Visor. Now, visors are great for guys who are bald. If you're bald,
now,
you can go visor.
If you wear a visor backwards.
Right? Like Matt Nagy. Nagy goes visor.
Visor backwards is unemployable.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
I mean,
yeah.
At least you can get a job when you wear a hat backwards. It's just, you know. Not going to get the job, but you can get a job. Okay, I got to go. Doug Gottlieb, top of the show, Herd Hierarchy. Okay, Jerry Jones is talking. He does a weekly press conference, and sometimes he steps in it. And this morning, Jerry stepped in it. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Good stuff. Jerry Jones has press conferences every Tuesday morning in Dallas, and about twice a year he steps in it. He was talking about watching Monday Night Football last night on a radio station, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. So he's talking about Patrick Mahomes, which he watched last night, and some people were offended. He was talking about how Mahomes can run around, and he has this it quality to run around and always make the play successful. Here's Jerry.
As much as just his natural ability to make plays, his mobility, this guy's very quick and elusive and can get in and out of situations with his feet and by time. The quarterback we played Sunday is of that kind of nature. He has great ability to get in and out and then make the play. That play Dak made at the end of the game that got intercepted. The result of Dak's ability that let him get that ball off was really great and outstanding. Well, these guys have that ability a lot. Romo had that. They could turn his back on it and turn around and hand-eye and get it done quick.
Oh, boy. So somebody that covers the Dallas Cowboys, Clarence Hill, went to Twitter and said, Jerry just said Dak not being able to pull off the last play of the game is the difference between he and Patrick Mahomes or even Tony Romo. They could have pulled it off. Did I hear that? Wow. Okay. Now, you could say Dak's not Mahomes or Russell Wilson. That's not a story. Saying Dak's not Tony Romo in Dallas obviously is going to be a huge story. I actually think Romo and Dak have a lot of similarities. I think they're much more similar than dissimilar. Good leaders, going to get you a lot of wins and a lot of stats. Well-liked, athletic, biggest games, always a little short. And I would say this, Dak gets you close, but in fairness, doesn't have much of a defense. And Tony Romo got you close. But in fairness, most of his career until the very last year, Dallas's offensive line was a mess. It got really good when he left. But when you consider talent and circumstances and resume, I think Dak and Tony Romo are very similar. Clearly talented, a lot of numbers, a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, excellent leaders. I think Tony's a little bit more of a gunslinger. He had a little livelier arm, a little more of a gunslinger. Dak's much more durable physically, a little safer, better securing the ball. I think when they do design running plays, Dak is better than Romo. But this is going to make, you know, a lot of news in Dallas. I don't think it should be. I think what we've seen with Dak in his career is we know what he is. And I think it's funny. I had to defend Romo for years. I was always like, he's way better than you people think. I always feel like I'm negative for Dak. Because I think the feeling on Dak is he's a little better than he is, but they're kind of the same guy. I like the leadership. I like the talent. I like Dak's durability more. I thought Tony was a little livelier with the arm. But in the biggest stages, Cowboy games are all on television, a little short. That's the same for both. And both have a legitimate excuse. The Cowboy defense for Dak hasn't been great. And Romo's O-line for almost all of his career was nonsense. Yeah, they got all the good guys, By the time he left and gave it to Dak, the O-line was great. Okay, so here's something that drives me nuts. I'm not going to say it's about the younger generation or older generation. I don't want to do that. But sometimes you just have to solve problems. You can't run from everything. If your house gets a leak, you can't just abandon your house. You got mortgages. You got kids. If you're you and your kid get in a fight, you can't put them up for adoption. Okay? If your car breaks down in the road, you going to leave it there on the freeway? Or are you going to get it fixed? Call AAA. Or you got to go to the trunk and get a tire. You got to fix stuff. The answer isn't always, we're getting rid of the plan. Toughen up. Sometimes you have to, you know, get off your podium, get down and fix crap. In Philadelphia, Carson Wentz is struggling. And of course, the solution is bench him. You paid him $150 million. Here's Doug Peterson at a press conference this week.
No, you don't go there. That's a knee-jerk reaction. That's a reaction to the aura that's out there, right? That's not what we believe internally, and we're going to continue to get better. Carson's our quarterback. We're going to get it fixed. He's going to get it fixed, and we got a long season. Listen, we're only a half game out of first place, for goodness sakes. The whole division right now is not playing very good football, so we're not that far off.
So let's think about two things here. Number one, as he said, they're a half game out of first. We're going into week four. We're not even a quarter through the season yet. Okay, this division is going to be won by a team that probably doesn't get their act together until Thanksgiving. And you can, that's why I said this weekend, going for a tie made sense. This division, a tie is better than a loss always, but in this division, 7-8-1 could win the division. We had that years ago. I think years ago, Seattle won a division at 7-8-1, and then the Saints were a better team, had to travel up to Seattle. I could be wrong, but I think that those were the particulars. This division could be a 7-8-1. It's not going to be Washington or New York, so it's Dallas or Philadelphia. The second thing is, have you seen the next three games for the Philadelphia Eagles? Okay, at San Francisco, at Pittsburgh, and Baltimore. You want to give Jalen Hurts that? That's how you want to give. Hey, Jalen, good luck, kid. Our offensive line's banged up. I know you just played college. Go face that. No thanks. I'm watching Joe Burrow get annihilated. No thanks. So they're a half game out of first. The next three games are brutal. And the other thing is, you got to solve it. You just paid him $150 million. It could be the offensive coordinator. What about your quarterback coach? We know Aaron Rodgers now, second year with Matt LaFleur, is working. I think honestly, Philadelphia misses Frank Reich, who now coaches the Colts. When Frank Reich was there, Carson Wentz had a winning record. Had a winning record. He was getting better every game. Since Frank Reich has left, Carson Wentz is 14-15-1, and he appears to be regressing. So with Frank Reich, he was talented and slowly got better. Frank Reich leaves, he's good, and slowly gets worse. It's not that he doesn't have talent. How do I know that? Because I watched the last month of the NFL last year. Carson Wentz carried an offense where nobody outside of his tight ends were healthy. The other thing is the easiest answer. Joey and I talked about this earlier. The easiest answer is always play Jalen Hurts, play the backup. Backups are in-laws. Less you see, the better they are. The more you see, you get tired of them fast. Jalen Hurts this morning would probably come in healthier. He'd be fresh. Nobody has tape. It would probably look great for a game. Probably for a game, you'd be like, whoa, they're going to San Francisco. They don't have Bosa, Forrest. DeForest Buckner was traded. So San Francisco's pass rush isn't quite as bad. You know, San Francisco right now is going to have a backup quarterback. For a week, it would look great. Then you'd go to Pittsburgh's defense. Then you'd see Baltimore, and you'd be like, that's not great. Take a deep breath. It's going to be fine. You got to figure stuff out. They paid big money. The solution, you can't put your kids up for adoption because you guys get into an argument and they swear at you. Like, you got to fix stuff. The thing that's interesting about the NFL, you really don't have that many players. I mean, almost nobody carries a third quarterback anymore, right? It's like, you have a starter, you have a backup, and then there's a guy in the scout team. The reality is, you got college football, you got 85 players. In the NFL, you got 50 to 55, and it's a more violent game. More guys get hurt. So it's a lot of times in the NFL, you just got to figure, you got this. You can't make a trade. There's a trading deadline in the NFL. Like, there's a time where you can't make any trade. You're done. So figure it out. Solve it. So, Joy, did you think Jerry Jones threw Dak under a bus? I think you could argue it either way.
It doesn't sound great. If he had just said Mahomes, that's a different story. But, like, Romo, It's rough.
We went back and forth. We're like, is he throwing him under a bus, or is Jerry just rambling?
I don't think he did it intentionally, but just because you don't do something intentionally doesn't mean that the result is still not throwing him under the bus.
Well, we have a presidential debate tonight. Don't ramble.
Yeah, don't.
Owner of NFL teams and presidential candidates, don't ramble.
Speak with intention.
That's right. Hour two next.